welcome to Observations, wherever you may be on this fine day. We're going to pick up where we left off just a week ago, and it was with a statement that really surprised me. It was one that I'm sure I should have known, but I didn't know prior to translating it. I had always thought that Yahweh's favored son, Dod, who is Christians and others will refer to as David, even though there is no V in the Hebrew language, and the Wah is pronounced as an O, and it's D, so Delef, Wah, Delef, Dod. That the reason that the favored son could not build the house, and it's not a temple, it's just a house for the family of Yahweh, is because he was a man of war. He had spilled too much blood. And while the legends of history are all the great warriors of history, Yahweh does not want his family associated with killing. So it's the thing that made Alexander the Great famous, Julius Caesar famous, the thing that made really all of the most infamous leaders of yesteryear famous is something that God says, no, this is the thing that's going to preclude you from building the house for my name. So let's read through this, and there's several things in it that stand out to me. Hello, Kirk. How are you?
How are you?
Good. So then Dod said to Solomon. Solomon is the actual name of Solomon. It's based upon the Hebrew word shalom, which means to reconcile a relationship and to restore. So then Dod said to Solomon, my son, I had it in my thinking, judgment, and desire. This is M-Leb. M is with or in, and Leb is the Hebrew word for heart, but it's very seldom used to describe the organ that pumps blood. The English colloquium, take it to heart.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that you incorporate it, accept it, and incorporate it into your thinking and your perspective. So somebody has presented an idea, it should resonate with you to the degree that you take it to heart, become part of the fabric of your life. In Hebrew, the heart was considered the seat of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The liver.
Very appropriate.
Right. The liver was the seat of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So taking to heart does not mean feel all lovey-dovey about it. If it was take it to liver, it would be feel emotional about it.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It's take it to heart. And so in my heart, M-Leb, with my heart, this is with my thinking, with my judgment, in concert with my motivation, my desire. Fundamental to the way that I evaluate things and take them to heart. That I would build for the family, this is La Bena. Now, some might just say, well, you know, the verb Bena means to build, to establish, to restore. And some might just say, why not just leave it at that? That I would build. You know, why take it to the family? Because, and the reason for that is that Bena is the feminine of Ben.
Right.
And it's not actually daughter, which would you'd think that Ben's son would be the feminine would be Bena, and it's very close to that, but it's not written exactly that way. But Bena is speaks of, in particular, building a family home, building the family name, establishing the family name. So that I would build for the family a home, Beyeth, a house. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. To recognize and approach the name of Yahweh. So what people would call a temple,
yeah.
Yahweh said, no. this is not only a family home that we're going to build, so you're not building it for me. You're not building it to honor me. You're not building it to worship me. You're not building it to as a tribute to me. You know, that's not what this is here. This is not like the Dome of the Hoofy print that Allah had his Muslims build, or worse, the Kaaba, which was the rock pile to rock gods in Mecca. No, this is a house for the family. And beyond that, it's to approach the name Yahweh. Yeah, that is, it really is. Because what that is saying is that this is a specific family that you're joining.
Right.
You're going to have, when you approach Yahweh, your last name is his name.
You know, it cannot be a family of worshipers. It could not be a family of praisers.
Right.
That would be ridiculous in this context.
Right. So this is a family home to approach the name. And there are a lot of people, Kirk, that try to discount who we are and what we know, what we have to share, by saying, you know, you kind of have a religious zeal, a cult-like affection here for this name, for the words, and for the name.
Yeah,
the name of God.
Kind of a cult-like.
Yeah.
He's pretty sad about his words and his name.
Yeah. This was to approach.
On par with him.
Yeah, to recognize that the house is being built for the family.
Yeah.
So as to recognize and approach the name of Yahweh, which means if you want to recognize Yahweh's name, you have to do it from the perspective of family.
Right.
Well, that certainly tells us that our interpretation of his name is correct. We see his name as having being comprised of the Father's hand reaching out and down to his children, just as any father would reach out and down with an open hand to lift his children up, and then two children. And those two children are Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah.
And it's the family that created the covenant. And so the perspective to recognize Yahweh's name is the family home, which was created initially through Abraham and Sarah, with the two people standing upright, reaching up to God. The last one, because it's a hey at the end of a name or word, is feminine.
Well, I even see a great deal of significance because it has a wall, not only because it's increasing the family home, like the tent peg that it represents, but even more so in that it increases us enlightenment, empowerment. If God were a Lord, our king, then he is highly unlikely to lift us up to become light like him.
Oh, no, of course, because a king, royalty, a lord, always wants to have people bow down before them. They sit up on their throne above everyone, and everyone has to approach them in a manner of humility, heads bowed, get down on their knees when they approach them. And, you know, it's a lord-serf kind of relationship. Everyone is subservient. Like, for example, most recently, the king of Saudi Arabia moved the heir apparent to the throne aside and elevated his son to be the new king. Not that the people got any say in that. And then the first thing they had to do is they all had to swear allegiance to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go down to the mosque and bow down before him and swear allegiance to him. That's and this perspective on Yahweh is the opposite of that. Not only is it a family, but the two people that are in Yahweh's name, the two heys, are two people standing up, reaching up, looking up. Those are the two heys, the letter that's repeated in Yahweh's name. It's the antithesis of bowing down, but it is the exactly what you would expect, that hand reaching out and lifting children up from the perspective of family. So Dode is saying that he, in his judgment, in his thinking, he was going to build the family home to recognize and approach the name of Yahweh so that you'd understand Yahweh's name. Then it came to be with me the word of Yahweh. Now, the word of Yahweh is what made Dod, Dod. And he studied it. He sang about it. He lived it. And so it came to exist with me that the word of Yahweh to say, too much blood you have shed, and a great many wars you have engaged in. So you shall not build a home for my name because of the substantial quantity of blood that you have spilled upon the land and before my presence. Behold, a son shall be born to you who shall exist as an individual of favor and tranquility, of freedom and contentment. And I will free him from conflict, from all of his enemies, from all around, because Shalemah shall be his name. So favorable reconciliation and satisfying restoration from shalom and freedom from unfavorable circumstances and conflict, I will give to Yisrael throughout his days. So when Yahweh responds, so what Yahweh is saying to him is that you got one part right. It is a home to approach my name. He repeated that part of it. He said, but you're my son. I love you. I'm your father, but you're not the one that's going to build the home. And Yahweh wanted it very clear that the home would be built for the purpose of reconciliation and restoration. Right.
Right.
So
I think
with this
significance, he said through his days, because he did imply beyond that. And the empire, as it was, I mean, it became the highest point in their
right.
Culture and highest point of their country.
Israel shall never be as great as it was during the transition from Dod to his son Solomon until Yahweh returns and reestablishes it.
Right.
So this is an important perspective, but the single most important perspective is if you follow Dod to Yahweh, you will find reconciliation and restoration. The relationship, which is the covenant, will be reconciled and your soul will be restored. That's where Dod leads if you follow him. But as we began this, the thing that also stands out here is that the thing that made all people throughout history famous is the thing God says I'm not going to be associated with in terms of the home for my name. You know, I am not a war god. I'm not a god of death. I'm about life. I'm not about conflict. I'm about peace. I'm not about enslaving other people. I'm about providing freedom.
Yeah.
And that's what
the
home is for.
In fairness, he just cleaned his house because nobody else would. So David took the, he started with Goliath and kept going. And,
right.
He never asked him to go out and enslave anybody else or conquer new lands, just the land that he gave to Abraham from the start. So,
That's really interesting. Those people that would say that, God certainly would support wars of defensive wars, where you're fighting for your because somebody is trying to invade you or conquer you, and 100% of the battles that Dod fought were against foes that had come into Israel.
And invaded that.
Foes that were trying to destroy Israel. He wasn't going out trying to conquer other lands.
No. He didn't cross to the Nile and take, and he could have.
Right.
He didn't go over to Babylon, which was weak at the time, and take them. He could have gone north to Syria and taken them all the way up to Persia, all the way up to the northern part of the rivers. And he could have taken as much land as he wanted, if he wanted to, down to Arabia. He would have no match, but that wasn't his intent. It certainly wasn't Yah's intent.
No, Yah made it such that Dod would win every battle and that no foe would ever be successful against him, because Dode was about doing something that Yahweh wanted, which was to remove from the land all of these foreign religious, political, and military elements, because he wanted to have peace and reconciliation in his home with his family. And the only way to do that was to remove the poisons, the infection, the foreign foes that were there that were so corrupting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he did a wonderful job of that.
Yeah, it was the first step he made, first step in Bereth covenant, you know, in the family home. I mean, in the deal, you have to get away from
right. Right. And so what Dode did in the covenant, the first request is that requirement, really, is that you have to walk away from Babylon. You have to walk away from your country, from the human society, if you will, even from your father's house, because your father is all likely not covenant. And so that's the first requirement. And if Babylon is in your home because of your predecessors didn't keep it clean, then Dode did what needed to be done. He cleansed the home. He removed Babel from his home. And this is an interesting statement that that Dode tells Solomon next. Refined gold by weight for the model and detailed plan. This is Tabnith, the pattern for the replica and likeness representing something. Of the ceremonial chariots. Now, these are not war chariots. A chariot was the fastest form of locomotion of the day. And this particular chariot is a transport vehicle that is designed to be ridden. Of the cherubim. The cherubim are the guardians, remember, of Eden, who hovered over Yahweh's throne and the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. It's from Karutz, heralds to make proclamations, Kara, which is cottage home, and Kara, banquet and feast, where an exchange is made as part of a bargain, and Karub, to provide blessings. This is the back of the mercy seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ark of the Covenant, you know, a lot of people think it's just a chest because it's Ark. It is a chest, and inside of that chest are the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone. And those 10 statements are profoundly important. You know, they begin by Yahweh introducing himself by name and introducing his purpose, which is the antithesis of what Christians have been beguiled into believing was the nature of the God of what they call the Old Testament and of Israel. He says, you know, I am Yahweh, and I led you out of, away from bondage in Mitzrayim. You shall not exist with any other gods in my presence. He's a liberator. He's about freedom.
Mm-hmm.
To be with Yahweh is not only to be free of your sins, but it's to be free of human corruption, and it's to be ultimately free to be able to express your choices and will, and to be empowered and to no longer be constrained by time or the limitations of three dimensions or the ill effects of thermodynamics. So where, you know, we go from order to disorder, and we degrade and decay over time.
Yeah, no, but that.
Yeah, you had a decaying experience last week. I was primed.
Mm-hmm.
This week you were stoned.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in the hippie sense of the of marijuana, but in the sense of passing a kidney stone, which is as they say, worse than the pain associated with giving birth to a child, and you have no precious little treasure when you're done. Yeah, I'm not going to make a trophy of that sucker.
Laugh about it now.
You can laugh about it now. Yeah, and make sure that it never happens again.
I hope.
Yeah. And if there ever was a time in your life you're going to say yes to drugs, that is the moment. Refined gold by weight for the model and detailed plan of the ceremonial chariots, these transport vehicles to be ridden, of the cherubim. Now, the reason that's important is that the cherubim are spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. They're beings comprised of light. They're winged beings because they're not constrained to the kind of locomotion that we have or to gravity as we are. They can move very quickly. As a matter of fact, they can go from being in Yahweh's presence in the seventh dimension into our presence in 3D.
In the same moment.
In the same moment. Yeah. Instantaneously. For them, they're not stuck in time. And as a seven-dimensional creature, but an energy-based entity, they're able to maneuver not in seven dimensions in time, but in our 3D world, even in our six-dimensional universe, if in fact dark energy and dark matter are dimensions along with time.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to maneuver in it. They're able to enter into our protection instantly. But the reason that they exist on the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh is because the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant, does far more than hold the 10 statements that Yahweh etched with his own finger, telling us who he is. You know, that every time I just mention the 10 statements, you just beg to go through them because they're so profound. I mean, that the second one is don't be religious.
Yeah.
And the second one is, you know, under no circumstances should you be religious, and don't even be caught in a religious environment. You know, it concludes by saying that fathers corrupt their children generation after generation, and said that his mercy is available to thousands who observe. Yeah, the terms and conditions of the covenant, and thousands amongst billions is one in a million. And the way that you receive his mercy ain't through prayer. It isn't through bowing down. It isn't through being repentive. It isn't for spiritual laws or worshiping a dead god on a stick. It's about observing the terms and conditions of the covenant.
Yeah.
And that third one, of course, is so essential because this was a house for approaching and recognizing the name. It says anyone who does anything that causes my name to be not, yeah, diminishes the value and recognition of my name.
Shall not
be, shall not be forgiven. There is no forgiveness for diminishing the recognition, the value, and the importance of Yahweh's name. So those very people that will condemn us for being part of a cult because we make a big deal out of Yahweh's name, because he makes a big deal out of his name, mm-hmm. should know that one of the 10 statements, in fact, the third on this, the first of the two tablets,
mm-hmm.
says that his name is so important that those who would do anything which serves to negate the value of his name, like, for example, calling those of us who cherish his name, who speak his name, who write his name, who teach others to use his name, those who would demean those doing so, us, would be guilty of that statement that God etched in stone. Anyway, these 10...
It's pretty frightening. I mean, when he says, I will not forgive this.
Correct. Oh, and by the way, the first statement on the second tablet, the fourth overall statement, is about the enduring nature of the Shabbat.
The Shabbat.
Which means that if you're a Muslim and you're fixated on Fridays, that's sorry, but that happens to be the sixth day of the week. And if you're a Christian and you're worshiping God on Sunday,
first day of the week, yeah.
Yeah, you're wrong on both issues. You shouldn't be worshiping God. This is a family. You don't worship in the family. And number two, Sunday is the first day of the week, not the Shabbat, the seventh day of the week. So inside is the Ark of the tablets that Yahweh etched in stone, because they are so essential to our understanding. On the outside, Yahweh said that the original scroll that was scribed by Moshe following the 40 days of transcription from Yahweh on Mount Horeb, that would always remain beside the Ark of the Covenant. And the purpose of that is to explain it, to explain how you get to sit there, how you get to write it. Now, the Ark of the Covenant, yes, it holds those Ten Commandments, the statements of Yahweh. It is the place beside which the original scroll of the Torah still resides, explaining what it's all about. But most important of all, it's a seat, and it is a chariot. By chariot, it's a transport vehicle. It transports us from 3D to 7D, from mortal to immortal, from imperfect to perfect. It's a transport vehicle, and it is a seat in the sense of the most important seat in the world. It gives us the opportunity to sit at the place of honor besides Yahweh. It is our seat. And when we sit in that seat, guess what? We have wings. That's why the wings are the back of the seat. When we sit back into that seat, we have wings. And the wings are golden because the gold color reflects the light. And it's not just light, it's warmth of light, radiance of light, shimmering light, because our wings will be of light. Yeah.
All the dross is removed. So it's
right, and we become spiritual beings, which is, again, why there's this, the wings of a spiritual being are on the back of the mercy seat. I don't think there's many people that recognize what the Ark of the Covenant represents.
Everywhere you turn, Yahweh seems to tell the same story over and over. I was reading today through the end of this chapter, and it's, it is the 10 years now, at least, or close to, I've been reading and studying this stuff, and it always comes back, and the more you delve into the words, like it or lump it, the more you delve into it, you're not going to find any other story. He tells it. And when you do find something that's off, it's usually easy to find that it was transcribed by somebody or translated by somebody incorrectly, or we have no reference whatsoever to base it on or something like that. But the stuff that is tangible and easy to find and easy to prove historically that this was then, this was written at that period of time, it's always the same story. He's. I don't want to say redundant. I don't want to say, because that's a negative kind of connotation for most people. But he is a profound teacher, and he obviously thinks we don't get it easily, because he says it over and over,
to drill it
into us.
Right.
This is the plan.
Right. And here he has this word for plan that is marvelous. He says, "Refine gold by weight for the model and detailed plan." The tabnith, the pattern of the replica, the likeness representing something. So this is the plan of a replica of this transport vehicle. Of the gold was for the cherubim, these winged spiritual beings, to be made out of gold, which are spread out and adorn the ark. A marvelous visual image, a pattern, a plan. And so just to read that, okay, so this were the cherubim, and you have no idea what cherubim are except cute little winged, you know, they're made always out to be almost baby angels. Yeah, baby angels. Yeah, little fat baby angels. And this chariot is now... You look at it as a war chariot as opposed to no. There's
speed vehicle.
The Ark of the Covenant had no bridle. It had no reins. It wasn't horse drawn. It had loops on both sides and was lifted up so that and carried by the Lowy. Those who were the uniters, those who explained the purpose of all of this, they're the ones who on Pesach, Passover, made certain that some of the blood of the Passover lamb was sprinkled on the mercy seat to make us immortal, to perfect us. All of that is part of the symbol of this, and And it's a way, it was lifted up as it was carried, and the means to carry it was people walking. Mm-hmm. Because Yahweh wants us up on our feet and walking, and he wants to lift us up.
Yeah. And so, hey.
Right. So consider that is your throne, covenant member. Those are your wings, covenant member. That's your seat of honor. That's your transport vehicle from three dimensions to the empowerment and freedom of seven dimensions.
But if you'd rather have a Lord, you can always just walk away.
Yeah, you can. And, you know, you can, if you want to have a false God, be religious. Now, this was the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh. Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh. So when Paul wrote in Galatians that the original covenant was with Ishmael and that it enslaved, and that's why they had to have a new covenant that Paul himself was responsible for. Shouldn't somebody have slapped old Paul up against the side of the head and said, hey, idiot, that original covenant wasn't with Ishmael.
No.
With Yahweh. It's Yahweh's covenant. And by the way, he made it not with Hagar.
No.
And Ishmael, but with Sarah and Yishak. But it's still Yahweh's covenant.
Yeah.
Paul got everything wrong. And why would anyone in their right mind, when Galatians was his first letter and he lied this overtly, why would anybody believe anything the man had to say?
That's the $64 million question.
It is, isn't it? Or the 2.5 billion person question.
Yeah, 2.5 billion.
So the gold was to spread out and cover and adorn the cherubim, the spiritual beings, winged spiritual beings, of the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh. Then it says, everything in writing, inscribed by the hand of Yahweh. He provided insights and understanding for the entire plan of the work of the spiritual messenger and representative, Malacha. You know, we do this show and the Shabbat program on Blog Talk Radio verbally. And there's a lot of people that like to listen to it, the new podcasts of it when they're driving or you know, after dinner, whatever time it's convenient for them to listen, either off their computer or podcast. And it's a verbal presentation of Yahweh's testimony and insights that can be gleaned from it. A little bit of a tutorial on some of the words that he's chosen to use. But primarily, we gather to study Yahweh's words in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were talking about as you were to read these materials. You've got Yada Yah, an introduction to God, observations for our time, questioning Paul. All of these books collectively, about 7,000-8,000 pages of materials, are a written representation of Yahweh's testimony, translated in as accurate and complete a manner as is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then a commentary on what some of these words individually mean, should they be beyond what can be written about them in the context of the statement itself, as well as insights that can be drawn from it.
Yeah.
We prefer, for many reasons, one of which is God prefers, written communication. You know, I get in squabbles with people from time to time. I say, let's just talk on the telephone. We can, you know, we'll talk through this, and we won't have miscommunications like are prevalent with email. And my view is exactly the opposite. So is God's.
Mm-hmm.
Words are words, whether they're spoken or written, but you have an enduring record of them when they're written.
Examine over and over.
That's correct.
I can't do that. Even I would have to push a button, go back. No, it's right there. You just look it up.
Yes. Now, this was Chronicles, which is Dabri Ha Yomim, words of the time, words of the days. So when it says that Yahweh provided by his hand a written instruction regarding this, that would have been the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, what he's saying here is that the Torah is Yahweh's instructions, insights for understanding, shakal. He conveyed comprehension through effective teaching and instruction, leading to an appropriate response. And then the last word here is for the work of the spiritual messenger and representative. It is malacha. The only difference between malach and malacha, malach is the word, yeah, that Yahweh uses over and over again for spiritual envoy, heavenly messenger. The moronic Christians, with a disdain for all things Hebrew, don't recognize that Yahusha spoke Hebrew and therefore never said agelos. And what Christians have done, because they hate Hebrew and they hate Yahweh, is that they've taken the Greek translations of what Yahusha said, and the Greek translation for malach is agelos, and they have then transliterated it as if it were a name when it's simply a word. And so angel, which is a transliteration of agelos, is wrong by every possible way. The term Yahweh chose, and they're his beings, they're his Shabbat, his spiritual envoys, is malach.
Yeah, I think.
And once you know that, then you can look at malacha and say, well, that's the feminine of malach. And you get it. Covenant, by the way, is a feminine noun.
Yes. So is Torah.
Yeah, so is Torah.
So is Yahweh.
So is Yahweh. It's a feminine
pronoun.
They're all feminine nouns. Malacha is the feminine of malach, which is the Hebrew word for spiritual messenger and heavenly representative. And there is a connotation associated with malacha that suggests that it is the work or business of, and I don't have a problem with that. So it's the work of the spiritual messenger. It's the business of the heavenly representative.
Well, we're doing the work of our Father.
Mm-hmm. But this is everything associated with the covenant and the Ark of the Covenant. For us to participate in the covenant, Yahweh had to delineate specific instructions on behalf of not only his Malach, who protect the covenant's children, but also on behalf of the set-apart spirit, who plays an enormously important role in facilitating the work that's required for us to be part of God's family. So that's what's being conveyed there. So this is a very, very profound discussion. We then hear Dod saying, then Dod said to Shalomah, his son, choose to be resolved, firm, and strong, and courageously act and engage. Do not be timid or afraid, and avoid confusion, because Yahweh Almighty, my God, will not be feeble or falter with you, or abandon you, ever, always, and eternally, finishing and completing all of the work of the spiritual messenger and service of the heavenly representative for the tasks and efforts of the home of Yahweh. Well, once again, these are not just full of insights, but insights that are the antithesis of religion. What is most people who are religious say? Well, that teaches you to have a humble spirit and to be Gentile, right, and to be meek. No. Dod said to Solomon, his son, choose to be resolved, firm, and strong. That means don't be accepting, don't be compromising, don't be tolerant. you know, a politician is one who's praised because they compromise. No, he says, be resolved, be firm.
Yeah, stand up.
Yeah, they're multicultural. We'll just accept everybody and everything. He said, no, be intense, be harsh.
Seek
every opportunity to repair and restore the relationship by being overpowering and persistent, always going beyond what might be expected. Be inflexible. Engage with a sense of urgency. Now, this was written in the call imperative, which means genuinely and of your own volition, you should be resolved, firm, and strong. Inflexible. Yahweh is not flexible. Yahweh doesn't compromise. Yahweh is not multicultural. Yahweh is not tolerant. He doesn't want his children to be.
No, Chizuk is, to take by force, to possess,
yes,
rebel,
right,
to whatever.
Yeah.
Choose
to be intense.
No question, that's what it means.
You know, all the times that initially I would be so intolerant, unaccepting, judgmental. I would speak about two Christians when Christians would approach the shows that I was on initially, and I would be very harsh with them. And someone says, you just don't act like Jesus. If you're going to represent God, you should act like Jesus. And you say, well, first of all, there's no Jesus. There's a Yahusha, and I don't know where you get the idea that he was meek or that he was accepting. Or that he was not judgmental.
No.
I mean, you obviously haven't read the same text that I have read. No. Yahweh is judgmental. He wants us to be judgmental. He wants us to be harsh. And that's the
matter.
Right. It's the kindest thing we could actually do. Because if we accept that which is deadly and perverse and corrupting, then we aren't providing any value to anybody. When we tell people, listen, if you're a Christian, you're throwing away your soul. If you're promoting Christianity, you're putting yourself in a position where you're likely to spend your eternity in Sheol, separated from God. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
We tell people that Paul was a false prophet, that he's the plague of death.
Oh, but I like old Paul.
Yeah. That Jesus, there's no one named Jesus ever lived, that there is no such thing as a Jesus Christ. And while that sounds harsh and judgmental, it's the most compassionate and loving thing we could possibly tell those who have been beguiled by the religious. God also says, be courageous, Ametz. Be obstinate and stubborn. Establish and determine. Intensely persistent. Again, it's the opposite of political correctness. It's the opposite of what man would have you be. It's the opposite of what we're being conditioned as a society, which is why you have to walk away from societal customs if you want to engage in the covenant. You have to be the opposite of what society would prescribe as good, as correct.
Well, I also found intellectual power as a Metz as well, and that would imply to me that you'd want to study and learn more. So
yes,
you're not waiting on something to come to you in your brain. You sit and you dig it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to be established and determined if you aren't resolved intellectually, if you haven't studied the data, understand it, and take it to heart, incorporate it into your life. That's how you become established and determined. Act and engage. You want to participate in the covenant? You got to act.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to approach the house for the name of Yahweh, you have to engage. The covenant is a family relationship, but to be part of that family, you must act and engage based upon the terms and conditions that Yahweh has articulated.
Yeah.
And Dode is telling Solomon, choose to engage. Choose to be firm. Choose to be resolved. Choose to be courageous. And then Al Yari, do not be timid or afraid. Mm-hmm. No reason to ever be timid or afraid. You know, we've all done things in our life which would cause most people to cower. And once you're part of Yahweh's family, there's no reason to. When you're engaged doing what Yahweh wants done on behalf of his family, he is committed to assigning his Moloch to protect you. There's no reason whatsoever to be timid. Now, he did not say that I will preclude you from having the pain of kidney stones. Nor is, you know, I had 2 weeks of pain associated with a twisted back.
Yes.
No, he's not removing us from the aches and pains of the world.
No, we're still deteriorating,
yes,
whether we like it or not. And
well,
I don't want to live in this home forever.
Yeah, that's part of the comparison between where we are and where we're going. It's appropriate for us to feel pain in this life. Mm-hmm. It's appropriate for us to deteriorate. It's appropriate for my back and knees not to be what they were and to be getting worse. My eyesight to be failing. My hearing to be failing. My ability to think waning. You know, I don't think as fast. I don't move as fast. I'm not as flexible. You know, I'm much more prone to nagging pain than I was as a young person now that I'm in my 60s. That's appropriate because if we the contrast between where we are deteriorating, flawed mortals, to what Yahweh is lifting us up when we sit down on that mercy seat, that throne, that transport device, that takes us away from all of those things, liberates us from them. And that's the message here. So it don't be timid. Don't be afraid. Understand. You didn't say, you're going to feel no pain. You know, if you felt no pain whatsoever, how would you grow? How would you have a backbone? How would you be resolved and firm and strong?
True.
So you've got to have some challenges. Then he says, because Yahweh Almighty, my God, will not be feeble or falter with you. So when he's telling his son to be resolved, firm, strong, and courageous, engage, don't be timid or afraid, even avoid confusion, which is the next one, which I forgot to say for some reason. Do not be dismayed or discouraged. Avoid corruption and misperceptions, misunderstandings, and muddled thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then he's saying, because these are all traits manifest by Yahweh. Yahweh is going to be these very same things. You want to be like Yahweh? Then be resolved, be firm, be strong. Be intolerant. Be determined and intensely persistent. Never be afraid. Avoid confusion. And then you'll be just like Yahweh. God, Yahweh is not a God of confusion. He has a plan. He's articulated his plan. He's very consistent with that plan. I love that, Al Chadat. Do not be dismayed or discouraged. Avoid corruptions, misperceptions, misunderstandings, muddled thinking. Never panic. Never be confounded.
Mm-hmm.
Never become demoralized. Never be downcast. Never allow terrorism to shatter your resolve.
Right.
Just think of all the terrorism in the world and the people.
Don't even get discouraged.
Yeah.
You'd be all right.
It's going to turn out fine. Yeah. What do you have to worry about?
Yeah.
Don't be discouraged. And the way to avoid being discouraged is to avoid misunderstandings and misperceptions. The way to avoid misperceptions and misunderstandings is to know Yahweh and to observe his word. And to recognize that God's not into compromising. He's not multicultural. He's not politically correct.
Okay, you're going very, I can barely hear you. I don't know whether it's your microphone or...
Oh, I don't know what we have. Maybe we have an issue. But these traits are consistent with Yahweh's nature, and to be part of his family, he wants us to embody these traits. And they're the opposite traits of those that are conveyed by religious. Now you might say, okay, well, in Islam, they're sure as hell aggressive. You know, yeah. But in Islam, keep this in mind. Muslims aren't, while they are harsh, they certainly are not what you would consider engaging in a sense of urgency seeking opportunities to repair and restore a relationship, which is part of Shazak. They don't go there. And they're actually not strong. They're extraordinarily feeble.
They're cowardly.
Yeah, they're extraordinary.
They commit.
Yes, they are. In fact, that's why that the vast preponderance throughout time, 100% of Muhammad's actions were against civilians, never against the military. And you look at suicide bombers today and Muslims like the Islamic State, they're much more prone to attack women and children and kill civilians than they are anything else. So they're cowardly. And rather than this do not be timid or afraid, their whole mantra is to terrorize, is to cause people to be afraid. And there is to be a Muslim, you have to be wholly and completely confused. It's the most muddled thinking ever to permeate a book attributable to God. And of course, this is because Yahweh Almighty, my God, is like this. And of course, with Islam, it's Allah. And you know, this idea of being courageous, Muslims are cowards, always have been. They attack little girls.
The helpless. Yeah, they rape the slaves. Enslave and then rape.
Right. That is correct. Yeah. It's just disgusting. But it says Yahweh will not be feeble or falter with you. He's not going to abandon you ever, always, and eternally. If you choose to engage and become part of the covenant, if you're resolved and firm, you're courageous, if you act and engage in the covenant, if you do not fear God, but instead respect him, if you avoid the confusion of religion, then Yahweh is going to do whatever is necessary. He will not falter with you. And he will always and eternally finish and complete all of the work spiritually that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, the all of Kol, finishing, completing, that would be La Kala, always and eternally, finishing and completing all of the work of the spiritual messenger of the heavenly representatives for the tasks and efforts of the home of Yahweh. Now, God's not, he didn't say, I'm going to do everything necessary for Israel to win every battle. No. He didn't say, I'm going to do everything for you to feel no pain. He didn't say, I'm going to do everything to make you fabulously rich. He's going to do everything, completing everything that needs to be done spiritually for the task and efforts, the Abadah, the work of the home of Yahweh. What's the home of Yahweh? It's the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
The family of Yahweh. It's the only thing that he cares about, really. You know, the land means something to him because the land is where his home is. Jerusalem means something to him because that's the capital of the land where his home is. Moriah means something to him because that's the mountain upon which his home is placed in Jerusalem, in Yisrael. Everything, the chosen people are important to him because they were the first to be invited to be part of his home. So the thing that God cares about, the one thing that he will assuredly do everything that's necessary to complete, is to provide all of the malacca, the work of the spiritual messenger and the heavenly representative, that would be the set-apart spirit, for the express purpose of the home of Yahweh, doing everything that is required. So once part of the covenant, always part of the covenant, and you can depend on Yahweh to do all of these things. Boy, there's some really wonderful words there, weren't there? We had Chizak, make the choice to be intense. seeking every opportunity to repair and restore the relationship and dissuade people who would tear it apart, be uncompromising and tenacious. That's what you need to be if you want to be like God. A metz, be obstinate and stubborn, persistent, persevering, gutsy and brave.
Mentally astute,
Yeah, a saw, engage and act, expending considerable effort and energy and resources, doing what needs to be done, working at accomplishing the mission. Al Yari, never fear, nor show any distress, even when the circumstances appear unfavorable. Do not be timid. Al Cha'at, avoid confusion and corruption, misperceptions and misunderstandings. Do not be dismayed or discouraged. Never panic. Don't be broken. Don't be demoralized or downcast. Never allow terrorism to shatter your resolve. Those are...
It's all there. You ain't making this stuff up.
No, it's... Really, it's very, very...
Translated that. I don't know why they don't, but...
Powerful stuff. No. And Salama embarked on a journey with the entire assembly... assembled community, which had gathered together in response to the summons with him, to the elevated place, which beneficially was on Gibbon, because that is where the brilliant tent of the appointed meetings existed of the Almighty, which to beneficially show the way to the relationship, the associate of Yahweh had engaged in the wilderness. So here we